Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy. Hey, fans, listeners, Lindsay Cortez here, your host of the podcast, registered owner and sports dietitian of Rise Up Nutrition. I'm here today with a client of mine, and I'm just going to say a friend as well, Tara Vavrick. She likes to go by Tara Lucky Sparrow Vavrick. And let me just tell you a bit about her myself, and then she's going to shed so much light on her journey with fueling and hiking and exercise and body today. Tara is an outdoor recreational athlete. She fell in love with outdoor sports at a young age, but didn't necessarily pursue it until she was around 18 and she moved to Colorado for school. She's a hiker, rock climber, and occasionally kayaker, surfer, and rafter when given the opportunity. Tara thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2021 and currently training for the John Muir Trail, if she can snag a permit, for 2023. Tara, super excited to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. And just to update it, I did get a permit, so I will be doing it this year.
Wonderful. Amazing. Can we just dive into that really quickly? Maybe just explain to our listeners what through hiking is, how that's different than hiking.
Yeah.
And then like why getting a permit is necessary.
Yeah. So through hiking, a lot of people think of the Appalachian Trail, which is what I did in 2021. And then there's other big hikes that are technically national scenic trails that the government or country acknowledges it. And essentially, it's just one big giant push. So you are through hiking, like you're doing the entire thing in under a year. And so for that could be like 6 months for like the Appalachian Trail. For the John Muir Trail, it's not that long. It's only 211 miles, I believe. But through hiking is essentially a very long backpacking trip where you're trying to get all of those miles in before the end of the year or within one year. It doesn't necessarily have to be within the calendar year.
Okay. Yeah. And so ultimately you're not just hiking that day, but you're getting from point A to point B. And then, you know, figuring out your sleeping arrangements and food situations, which very often involves, you know, pitching a tent and eating what you're carrying. But sometimes, depending on the trail, could also involve, you know, making a stop into town pending where that is. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. So like the Appalachian Trail, there's so many towns that are close by that you could like go into town. There's a couple, like in New Jersey, there's a thing called like deli blazing is what it is. And that's because like there's a gas station within like 10 miles of each other that on the like literally right on the trail that you could go in and go get like a sandwich. John Muir Trail and like the Pacific Crest Trail, which is the bigger trail that the John Muir Trail also like contours, is a lot more remote. Same with the Continental Divide Trail, which goes right through like with the Rockies. So it's a little bit harder to do, but the terrain isn't as bad, so you normally can get food within like a 7-day period.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that you would, one, have to plan for, but you also want to plan not to have it because many things can go wrong or unexpected during such an adventure.
Right. There's a lot of help, especially for most of these trails, especially like the Appalachian Trail for sure. It's got its own cult following, is what we like to say. There's so many people that are a part of that because there's so many hikers that do it. Plus, on top of that, the towns really know the hikers. And then on top of that, there's these people called trail angels, which essentially are just normal everyday people who literally kind of like an event where they come out and bring like food. These people just out of the kindness of their heart are coming out to like give food. For the other trails, I've only done like sections of them, but from what I've heard, it is not like they have that community, but it's not as like rich. Like there's really nothing like the Appalachian Trail just because there's such a huge community behind it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I've definitely, you know, as not being a through hiker myself, I'm not, you know, in this world, but I've heard a lot about the Appalachian Trail and I can sense that community there. And Pacific Crest Trail, the most I know about it is from that book and movie
Wild, yeah.
A few years back. Wild, yeah. Read the book when I was in college. It was a good book and then a good movie.
It is.
As well. Yeah, interesting. And then I think my sister lives in Colorado, so I think I, at one point in time, took a picture next to the Continental Divide Trail, but I did not hike it myself, but there was a sign for it. So
yeah,
I have some awareness of these things.
Oh yeah. A lot of people don't, especially if you've been hiking on the East Coast or near like New Mexico, Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, or in California and stuff like that. You've probably touched one of these trails at some point. You might just not have known it. So
yeah. Now, again, as I read off your bio, you know, you love being outdoors, you love movement, adventure seeker, but I'm also curious, like, why back in 2021 or prior to 2021, like, what drew you to say, I want to complete the Appalachian Trail, I want to do the whole thing, I want to, you know, that is just such a big deal. And also, like you said, it takes months. And like, so that's like a life thing of like, your family has to hopefully be on board and supportive. Work, job situation, you stepped away from that for a certain amount of time, right? Like what, like, I would just love to know where your head was at and like, you know, what drew you to it?
Yeah. So I read there's a book that my mom gave me. And it's funny because like my mom always asked me, she's like, why did you do this? And I was like, well, you gave me the book. And there's like, it was this book about this young girl who her parents hiked the AT and her parents ended up getting a divorce and her mom was in Georgia and her dad was in Maine. And so she was like, well, I guess I'm just going to hike the Appalachian Trail. And it kind of, that put the seed in it. And then I didn't really think much about it. As I got older, I started to really enjoy like being in the outdoors with like hiking and backpacking and rock climbing. But it wasn't until after college, I was working at a job that essentially what they told me was you need to slow down because I was very efficient and I was very like on top of my deadlines. And so I kind of got bored at work essentially, which is probably at that time I should have been like, okay, maybe I should be looking for a different job. But instead, yeah. I used it as a tool to research the Appalachian Trail. And I watched like, there's like a huge YouTube community. And so I just started watching Appalachian Trail and Pacific Crest Trail videos. And I got super inspired. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was not married or engaged. But a couple months later, after starting to plan this, my now husband asked me to marry him. And I remember as we're walking back, because we actually got engaged like right on the Appalachian Trail in the Shenandoah mm-hmm. National Park. And I remember walking past and be like, just letting you know, I want to do this trail. So if you want to marry me, you got to know that I'm going to do this.
That's hilarious.
So
he supported that.
Oh, obviously. 100%.
You're married now.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I think I might have actually put it in our vows or something like that. But he also put in like building like a Land Cruiser from like the 70s. And he is doing that currently. So it all works out.
Amazing. And accomplishing these things in the first few years of marriage already.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that seed was planted. And then it was kind of like work-wise for you. they really gave you an opportunity, and then you just set your mind to it and you did it, made the arrangements.
Yeah, I talked to work and I was like, hey, just letting you know, this is what I want to do. Like I even said it, I think in the interview of like, in a few years, I'm going to do this. And they were pretty cool about it. They were very supportive.
Wow.
But I wanted to quit because like full quit. And then I still wanted to maintain the relationship just in case, like if I wanted to go back to it, because I really didn't know what I was going to want to do when I got back.
Yeah.
That's 6 months of just, you know, reflecting and just being on your own. And I don't know. I'm glad that that's kind of the route I took, because if I had to get like back to a job, like took like a big absence, I don't think I would have had the growth that I had afterwards. Mm-hmm. So
you did quit the job or stop the job before embarking on the adventure. Yeah. Yeah. Because like you said too, this is not just sport, movement, adventure. This is like, it's just you and the trail and nature for so long. I'm sure this was a turning point in your life, and just, I don't know. I really can't imagine, but it sounds healing and therapeutic at the same time. It sounds, as we'll get into, absolutely destructive to your body as well. So such a weird balance there of what happens during this, right? Mm-hmm. But isn't it sometimes the most challenging things that, you know, show us our true selves and can be so life-changing and empowering at the same time?
Right. Yeah. Like I really got to understand who I was. There was a couple things in my life. Like when I left for college, I didn't really get a chance. Like I just had something going one thing after the other. And I really didn't, like I was following what I wanted to do, but I really didn't like figure out, be like, oh yeah, like I can just go and just try and be myself for like 6 months and just try and just see what happens or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not to say that like I had to do that. I think I would have eventually like gotten to the point where I am today, but I just think it just would have been a lot slower, if that makes sense. So
yeah. And it's where your heart was pulling you to.
Yeah. So
yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we have, I think, so much to talk about when it comes to, well, everything and nutrition. Let's first start with just like the nutrition that doing something like the Appalachian Trail requires from your own personal experiences, like some things that went into the planning of it, how you fueled yourself, whether you think you did a good job at it or not, feel free to share. But just what sort of planning and intention, because we weren't working together at this time, just to be clear. I didn't know you at this time. So you did this all, you know, without any of my help. What was some of the, can you bring us through that process of planning nutrition and fuel for the Appalachian Trail?
Right. So like I said, on the trail, there are a lot of towns that you go through. There's some that you have like, you know, like the delis that I was saying. So you don't necessarily, like for the normal person with a traditional diet, you don't have to put too much planning into it from what I'm understanding. Especially like when it comes to availability of food from that standpoint. However, at the time, and I am currently not like this right now, thanks to Lindsay, but at the time I thought I had to be gluten-free. It was a very, I really think that that was the biggest thing that really hurt me when it came to fueling, because like I can remember this one instance, me and so when you meet people out there, you call yourselves like a trail family, because like you're essentially like family out there because you literally spend every single day with each other. And we went into this town and I think there was like, it was like a holiday weekend or something like that. And the only thing that was open was pizza joint that had only pizza. And I think they had a salad. I think that was about it.
Yeah.
So I couldn't eat anything there. Like, and a salad wasn't going to do anything. That was just going to go like right through me. So the next thing, and this is something I did a lot, was like go through like fast food restaurants. There was like a Dairy Queen. And I remember, because we don't have cars, and it was still during the time when drive-thrus, like fast food restaurants, wouldn't open their actual restaurant. It was only drive-thru. So we would walk through the drive-thru. And I remember I got like a bunless burger and fries. And that's kind of essentially what I had to do that separately. Well, the rest of my friends would like go and eat as much as they could. And I did take the time to look at each trail town to see which one had like a full grocery store and which one just had like, you know, like a Dollar General, because I knew a Dollar General wasn't going to have enough food for me to eat. That system worked except for like one, there was one place that I thought was going to be good. And it was like in the middle, the town is called Bland. It is called Bland, Virginia. And it just, the grocery store, I think the biggest thing that I was drawn to for food was boiled bagged rice. Like I think, which isn't as bad as you think it is, but it is a little weird to boil a bag of rice.
Oh, I've done it in college. I used to get those. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know they existed until then.
Yeah.
So it was a little weird for me at first, but yeah, a lot of times I would go into these towns and because I wasn't able to consume as much as I, like, because there wasn't availability, eventually got to a point.
Gluten-free options. Yeah.
Yeah. Gluten-free options eventually started to, you know, become more prevalent as you go more north. But in the South, especially when we were starting out, like there was one place that I asked if it was fried and the lady just kind of looked at me and said, she's like, yeah, what, like, why would, like, what's the difference? Why do you care? Or something like that. Mm-hmm. So definitely I wish that I knew that I didn't have to be gluten-free because it really hindered me. Cause later on in the trail, I got so tiny on the trail that I would go into towns. I remember we did a 20-mile day into town. We had enough time to go get food because we got up really early for like sunrise. And we went in and I remember sitting down at a restaurant and I think I ate like 5 bites and my body was like, nope, we're not full. We're not hungry anymore. Like my hunger cues like completely disappeared.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I wanted to do was like lay down and nap. Mm-hmm. When I got to the last month on my trail, people were telling me that I smelt like ammonia, which I've learned is like the sign that your body is starting to deteriorate.
Yeah, it's a byproduct of the protein breakdown.
Yeah.
And so you're like breaking down your own protein, your muscles and body cells.
Yeah. I had no energy. Even though I was still hiking it, I was miserable because like I had no energy. I remember I cried at lunch because I wasn't hungry because I knew I needed to eat, but I wasn't hungry. And then thankfully I had a lot of friends at that point to like help me move along and force me to eat. They're like, you need to eat. And they're like, you need to eat a next bite. Because it got so bad so like fast, especially because
yeah,
if I was not gluten-free, I think it would have helped me in the long run a lot better because there was a lot of people that, you know, they didn't lose a lot of weight. They were able to keep it on for the most part. But I mean, there was other people that lost a lot of weight where they ended up having to leave trail because their body was so deteriorated that they had to quit and stop. And
sounds like you were close to that too yourself, or maybe you were there and just didn't stop.
I didn't pee blood. So there was that. I didn't get to that point.
Okay, good.
I think I was able to keep it together long enough. But yeah, I definitely was pushing the limit for sure.
Yeah. Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the fast track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy. So again, going back to, you know, okay, food was available, but you had this restriction of being gluten-free, which in the, therefore, you didn't have much food available. You weren't eating enough. And sure, you get through the first half, like hanging in there. But by the end, it's like, you know, your body's like eating away at itself and you're just so fatigued and so exhausted. So I think one of the things here I want to stress, and we can talk about this too, is just, okay, so in something like through hiking, maybe weight loss does happen. We're not saying that that should be why you do it, but it might happen just because of the nature of this huge expedition that you're going on for so long. However, we want to make sure we're still fueling enough so that you get through it with enjoyment and strength and don't hurt your body in the process. Because, and we'll fast forward, that's ultimately why you came to me, is because then when you came back and you're back settled into, you know, quote, real life per se, like you were struggling with your health at that point and your hunger cues were all off, your digestion was all off, like, it, you couldn't just resume normal eating how you were before. It was difficult.
Oh, yeah. I actually tried to not be gluten-free in 2020 because of the sourdough craze. I don't know if you were a part of that. And I remember
I was not. Is that just like a pandemic thing that people started making tons of sourdough bread?
I think that was. I looked up and I was like, oh, I'm only gluten intolerant. I could. People say that it's fine. When in reality, I just should have known that I wasn't. I think I brainwashed myself enough that I was like, no, you would get sick. But I remember I like binged eat. I like full blown binged eat, and it freaked me out because I didn't know that was like, you know, like a natural thing when you restrict yourself for that long. But like when I came back from, like even before going on the trail, I knew that I needed to get help putting the weight back on because I knew it would freak me out because of how drastic of a change or just like how my mindset was whenever it happened the first time. Mm-hmm. So I knew that, but yeah, when I got back, I don't know. My husband was afraid that he would break me in half. I was so tiny. Mm-hmm. You could see my ribs and you could see my hips coming through. Like it almost looked like a skeleton almost. Mm-hmm. The worst part about it wasn't necessarily the fact that like my eating, like that part. The worst part about it is that I looked at myself in the mirror and I knew that I shouldn't. Like I should think, oh, wow, this is really bad. But instead, my brain was like, I like the way I look. And that was when I was like, that is not a good sign. Not a good sign at all.
Yeah. And so here's what I really appreciate you. I appreciate your honesty in saying that. And but also like your awareness that you knew this was not good.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like that was so key for you to say, okay, this is disordered. And so that's why we want to be honest with other people thinking that too. If you go through something drastic like that, and as Tara is saying, like, it's not good to look like a skeleton. That's not a good thing. My body smelled like ammonia. My husband was scared he was going to break me. Like, and yet my brain kind of liked that. Okay. Time to seek help. Yeah. Absolutely.
Thankfully, I did have, like, I didn't have a, there was some friends of mine that had, that their husbands did think that they were, like, when they got back from trail, their husbands or boyfriends, they thought different thoughts. There was one in particular, and unfortunately, thankfully, she's not with him now because he wasn't super supportive of her. But I'm so grateful that I had a partner that was very honest with me in that case and was like, you look like, no offense, but you look horrible. Like, you don't look like you are living, like, you look like you are falling apart. Like, I wouldn't say I'm a curvy woman because like I'm not that at that point, but I definitely have a lot more curves. Like I definitely have like bigger boobs and I definitely have like more, like I have hips and stuff. But when I got back, it almost looked like I was a freshman again from high school. And that was when I was like, okay, this is, I know I like this, but it's just because my brain is telling me this and I need to not listen to my brain because this is not healthy.
Right, right. Absolutely. And I think too, like as much as we want to say things like, oh, it's not about how you look, I think a comment like that from your spouse is very helpful to put this in perspective. Like, oh, wait, my spouse actually likes my curves and likes my butt. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me work on getting that back. Right. And, but do you mind shedding light on maybe some other people's experiences? Like you were saying of maybe like this friend of yours, like how maybe body changes as a through hiker can challenge your relationship with body and food. Your experience, as you're expressing, is one of them. But I think there's other experiences there too that can be just as harmful.
Yeah, there is. I would say a lot of the women that I made friends with out there, almost every single person that I talked to had some kind of weird relationship with their body and food, especially when they got back. There's this thing called hiker hunger when you're out and about, like on trail. And essentially, it's like you are not eating enough. So you come into trail and so you essentially binge eat so that you, it's just like to, I guess, help recover as much as you can because, you know, not able to eat enough. And so a lot of people dealt with that. And I would even say it's not even just women, it's men too that deal with this. There was a lot of men that dealt with this. But this friend in particular, she was in this relationship and she, I mean, it was like one of those relationships that like kind of were off and on and especially on trail. And her, like she had someone that she was like talking to, like they were essentially telling her that, oh, wow, you look so good and blah, blah, blah. Compared to like when I would talk to like my like husband, who was just like, I feel like I'm going to break you. Like he came and saw me midway through the trail and then he saw me at the end, but he said that even then it was really scary. So there was that. And then there was a couple other people that, because like, you know, when you hike that long, you do build, I will say this, you build a very big aerobic engine because you're literally hiking every single day. Mm-hmm. And you also do kind of, your muscles do kind of contour a little bit. Like I would say, I definitely have noticed that I have a lot stronger legs than what I had before. And so sometimes that does showcase like my calves are a lot bigger than what they used to be. And this is actually a very common thing with a lot of my girlfriends that hiked the trail. And they had it, I don't know why, but like there's a couple that were like, my calves are so big. I don't know if I like that or not. Like, and it was just kind of one of the, like, because your body changed so much. And then when you get back on trail and you put weight back on, because there's no way that you can sustain, nor that I don't think you want to, like, hike every single day and eat very little. Like, that's not enjoyable all the time.
Not enjoyable, not healthy, not realistic.
Nope. So they were like, oh, well, I'll just put a little bit of weight back on. And it's like, no. You put on all of it plus some. And it is something that, you know, it's kind of part of the trail. There is actually a big community of people starting to open up more about what happens. Unfortunately, though, that's not something they tell you that happens afterwards. Like, I didn't truly understand what it meant to hike the trail, lose all the weight and then gain it all back. Like, I didn't know that happened. I knew that you lost a lot of weight, but no one talked about the fact that you gain all that weight back when you get back to your everyday life.
And I think that's the struggle, right? Is that, you know, in your situation, despite the disordered mindset at that time, you did recognize, wait, I need to gain the weight back. And, you know, you had a supportive husband tell you that as well. Other people struggle because they want to hold on to that aesthetic, or maybe they were getting positive reinforcement from people and they want to hold on to it. And then they can begin this disordered relationship with food and exercise post-trail because they're trying to hang on to something that's really unrealistic to hang on to. And then there's, like you said too, that, what'd you call it? Hiker's hunger?
Hiker hunger, yeah.
Is that what you called it? Hunger, hiker hunger, which is essentially, and you and I had a good conversation about this going way back to the very first starvation studies from during World War II era, which we cannot replicate anymore due to huge ethical issues with them. But at that point in time, researchers were interested in, like, because it was wartime and figuring out what, you know, soldiers were going through in their bodies and how to properly refeed and refuel soldiers coming back from war. They actually voluntarily had participants like go through a starvation period of cutting their calories in half. This is just such an interesting study. They cut their calories in half, which turned out to be around 1,500 calories a day. Just FYI, that was considered starvation for these men who participated in the study. And they kept them in there for about, it was about 6 months or so. And then they started refeeding them. And in that refeeding period, disordered eating behaviors absolutely started. Binging, you know, saving and hoarding food, becoming overly protective of food, and weight regain did happen. And sometimes even more weight than where they were when they started prior to the starvation study. So that's a study that, you know, I shared with Tara and talked about this because I'm like, oh, that's kind of like, you know, going through 6 months of energy deficiency throughout this through hike, you come back and you have this hunger's hike. That's that, oh my gosh, like my body is wants to refeed itself and will figure out a way how, even if you're trying to control it or prevent that. Like your body's going to figure out a way how, and that's where disordered eating behaviors can start. Mm-hmm. And yeah, crazy.
So the first month you like everyone meets each other. They're talking about like gear and stuff like that. By the second month, most conversations are about food, like the town food or, oh, I have this for lunch. Oh, I have this. Like, I mean, and you know, we do get
just so your brain is just saying, I need more fuel. And it just keeps thinking about it.
Yeah. The day that you go into town, essentially you're running because you just want the food so badly. So it is an interesting thing. A lot of people do not get to where I was because like with like losing their hunger completely, that's not normal.
Yeah.
But I
think you were in a severe state of energy deficiency. You know, you were absolutely, and that's what we see with Red S, your hormones got out of whack. Mm-hmm. And that includes appetite hormones and your digestion got out of whack and all that. Like, so I think people who have experienced Red S will agree. It's like, well, it's hard to, it's like the answer is eat more. Well, I can't because it's mm-hmm. like, I'm not hungry and it makes me feel sick to my stomach and it's, but that is the answer. Still, as hard as it is to accept.
Yeah.
Let's backtrack a little bit, actually, because I think, too, your journey with nutrition does extend maybe a little further back than just what happened to you on the trail, including the fact, as you already mentioned, you thought you had to be gluten-free. Can you just shed a little bit of light on why you thought that or kind of what your relationship with food was prior to the trail, even?
Yeah. So I was a competitive swimmer when I was in high school, and I think I was pretty regular. I didn't have a huge issue with food. I mean, there was a couple friends of mine that had moms that I think it's called almond moms that they're saying now.
That is a term now. Yeah. I try not to use it because now that I'm a mom, I'm just like, not that I'm an almond mom, but I just don't want to make fun of moms. But yes,
oh, yeah.
It is a term.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, like they definitely, I don't know. There was like a couple comments like on Halloween. They were like, oh, if you eat all your candy, you're going to get diabetes, which is completely false. But it wasn't until like I was a junior or senior in high school when unfortunately, my dad got sick. So I wasn't able to swim as often as I would have liked. And my coach at the time was trying to, you know, influence me and a couple other girls that, you know, wouldn't swim on the off season. For me, I had to go get a job because I wanted to help support my family. Mm-hmm. But I also was kind of quiet about it because at the time I didn't really want to, you know, I didn't want to bring a whole lot of light to that because everyone would just get sad. And I'd be like, okay, well, I don't want people to be sad. I just want to be me. So
yeah.
My coach at the time was trying to encourage me and a couple other girls that, you know, they probably weren't like super big into swimming. They were just doing it for the fun of it, but he probably like saw potential. But he sat us down, or he was, I think we were standing, I don't know. I don't remember exactly the environment. I just remember it was me and a bunch of other girls. And he essentially told us that if we, like girls, he didn't say who, he's just generally, girls that don't continue to swim tend to gain weight afterwards. And it's not necessarily a wrong thing, but when you tell a 16, 17-year-old that, that's a little different.
It's implanting the fear of weight gain and also, implanting the idea that you have to keep up exercise all the time. And
My mom.
Not a good thing to say.
No. And so that like freaked me out. And my mom at the time got diagnosed with a wheat allergy. She had like rashes. Like she really had to be like, it wasn't just gluten. It was like the entire protein she was allergic to. So she's looking it up. She's trying to do her research on it. And I was like kind of listening to some of the things that she was reading. And some of it was good and some of it was junk. And I got this idea that being gluten-free was going to solve my issues and stuff like that. So I legitimately brainwashed myself to tell myself that I was like, if I eat gluten, I'm going to get stomach issues. I'm going to get all of these things. I'm going to get acne. I'm going to get all of these things that I don't want. And if I just tell myself that I'm going to get in immense pain and I'm going to have to go to the hospital, like that's how bad I brainwashed myself.
Yeah. Thanks to Inside Tracker, I can get insights and feedback on my blood biomarkers whenever I want to. No more waiting for doctor's visits and them telling you, you're fine. Instead, you are in control of your health with Inside Tracker. For 20% off any of their products, blood biomarker testing, DNA kit, interage, head to InsideTracker.com and use the code RISEUP. Take your health into your own hands. Health, wellness, and fitness coaches, listen up. Practice Better is the all-in-one platform that I use to manage my business and my clients. From client scheduling and messaging, hosting sessions, taking notes, creating modules, invoicing, telehealth, building reports, and more, Practice Better is the better way to manage your practice as a nutrition or health or fitness coach. Look no further. Use the link in our show notes and use the code RISEUP20 for 20% off your first 4 months plus a 14-day free trial. I've been using Practice Better since the inception of my business, Rise Up Nutrition, and I couldn't be happier. Again, the code is RISEUP20, all caps. Use the link in our show notes for 20% off your first 4 months and a 14-day free trial. Let's get back to the episode.
Which is easy to do with all the things that you read online. I mean, there's a lot of fear-mongering nutrition information and, you know, gluten causes inflammation and blah, 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 that just like you can convince yourself of it. And whatever little problems you might be experiencing, because we all have little problems, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You'll think that's, oh, if I just remove gluten, that'll be it.
Yeah. And I did manage to stay small. Like because of that, because not only was I not eating gluten, but social settings, I wasn't eating like sweets because I also am a sweet tooth or I have like a big sweet tooth. I prefer sweet things. And it was so like, I remember like in college, like I didn't eat any gluten. I stayed true to that pretty much the entire time. The only thing I think I didn't keep true to was soy sauce because soy sauce has a little bit of gluten in it. But other than that,
it does. Yeah.
But I was like, oh, it's just so small that it doesn't actually affect me, which is like ridiculous. And I remember because later on the line, I decided to become a personal trainer. I remember the nutrition side of like them teaching, and they were pretty much teaching like nutrition 101. It wasn't like crazy. And I remember reading and learning about this stuff. This is scientific research that they have done. And they're just saying, hey, we just want you to know so that we don't want you to give advice. We just want you to understand what a good, like what this is. And they gave like eating disorder, like red flags and stuff like that. And I remember being like, oh, this is a bunch of junk. Like some of this is like good, but this Instagram post talking about like gluten being this is actually factual, because it was, I laugh at it because I was so brainwashed by that point.
You were in denial. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right.
This is the phase of your life and many people's lives where, yeah, you were so brainwashed, so entrenched in diet culture, and just so thinking that your way of doing things was the right way, that when somebody did present to you, no, this is what healthy looks like, this is a balanced plate, you were like, no way. Like, you got it wrong. Just completely in denial of it.
Oh, yeah. And as a personal trainer, I mean, because that was what I did before I went on trail, I definitely remember, like, I look back and I sometimes feel as though that they did a disservice to some people because of that. And it's bad, but I also have to remind myself where I was at that point. Like, I didn't even understand what was going on in my head. I thought I was perfectly fine. I thought this was a normal thing. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people in health and fitness that do have this idea. I remember, I like I said, I'm a little bit more curvier than most people, or I would say myself, I'm pretty curvy. That's like, I don't like to say I'm curvy, but I'm kind of curvy. That's like, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever, however you want to say it and you feel comfortable.
I was bigger or curvier than the girls that I was working with, right? And I just remember them talking about how much they didn't like their bodies. And I thought they looked beautiful. And they also were teaching and telling people how to live their life. And it was so toxic. There was one girl who actually was trying to put on muscle. I think she had the best head on her shoulders. She was very, very smart. She actually told me to read Dr. Rinaldi's No Period, Now What?
Yeah.
Because she was telling me, she's like, I think you need to go get you need to go take a nutrition course. And she was very honest with me. And I do appreciate that back, because I think that also was after the binge eating with...
This was after trail. And
yeah.
After the...
Yeah. Well, not before trail, like the little binge eating spurt like that I had, because I did tell her about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And she was the one that referenced that book. And after, I didn't read it at the time. I was like, nah, I don't need it. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it was like a couple months before getting on trail. And I started like really like, I don't know, there was a something inside of me that was like, okay, you're definitely going to need help when you get back. I don't know why, but you're definitely going to need to get help when you get back. Because there's some signs, but I didn't realize they were signs at the time. It was just kind of like I just knew it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just one of those
things. Yeah. Well, and I'll say too, I think this was the interesting thing about working with you is when you joined Rise Up Nutrition, it was this period post-trail. I think you were off of trail for quite a few months already. Or was it a year even?
No. I finished.
Okay.
I finished, what was it? September 29th. And I think I reached out to you around like November time frame.
Yeah, definitely. For sure, we were working together in December. I know that. So... Yeah. So a few months after trail, you come to Rise Up Nutrition, and it was, you know, we're dealing with this, hey, I'm in red S because of trail and like hunger, appetite all off and all this stuff and health needs to be restored. But there was also this layer of, I'm not sure that I had the best relationship with food before trail anyways. And even I myself didn't know, you know, when I'm working with somebody, I don't know the full story. I try and get as much information as possible, but so interesting working with you. It's been well over a year now. Just as we've continued to work together, we keep peeling back these layers of your history and journey of food and nutrition and body. And like you said, before going on trail, you were like, I think I need help with this, but you weren't even fully aware of like why and everything, you know, like, why was I binging on sourdough bread? Well, because you've been deprived of gluten for so long and you didn't even know that you could eat gluten, you know? And so there's so much that we unpack together that I even feel like, you know, you weren't somebody who came to me saying, I have disordered eating or I have an eating disorder. You came to me saying, I came off this trail, I need help. And then in working together, it's you kind of had this realization of like, whoa, I have disordered eating habits. And we started working through them.
Yeah. It was, and the worst part about it was like, I knew it, but like, I don't know. There's part of me that wishes that I did this before I did the Appalachian Trail. Obviously, that wasn't the journey that happened, but moving forward, because like after that, I did, while we were working with each other initially, I was like, okay, I think I'm going to train for a half marathon. And I mean, that was fine. And I did do that. But then I remember afterwards being like, okay, I need a timeout from training. Like, I just need a full, like, I need 6 months of just like, just move when you want to. And that's it.
Yeah.
Just because it was that relationship with exercise also was, I, after realizing my relationship with food was not great, I was like, okay, my relationship with exercise needs a timeout real quick.
I know. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, we've been through everything. Yeah. Like, because absolutely, you go from being a personal trainer and then hiking this trail to then like, wait a second, like even exercise is like becoming this kind of difficult situation because you were putting that pressure on yourself of, I need to exercise, I need to keep this up. And it, and that was becoming overwhelming to your happiness in life and health and even things like that. So yeah, then we had to,
yeah,
you know, you coming to that realization together. We've just done so much together.
Yeah. Now it's figuring out how to exercise and train for something and fueling for that. It's getting in the habit of learning how to do that again. So it's like you break it all down and then it's okay, let's slowly build this back up again. Because I will say this, the sleep module thing with the, that we did.
Yes.
So there was a challenge that we had where it was like, you know, eating like a snack at night and stuff like that. I had to reincorporate that like full-fledged because I would go to bed like a first week of starting this training. I started feeling hungry and I was like, oh no, we're not doing this again. So I got up every single time to go eat because I was like, I do not want to, no, mm-mm.
Yeah.
Do not want those to go away.
Yeah.
I like my hunger cues. They're great. They make life so much easier.
They make life easier. Yes, yes. So I want to shed some light for our listeners of kind of your work and journey with us. Hopefully this doesn't get too confusing, but I have over time offered a couple different ways that I can help clients. So you first came to us when I was actually doing like a group run program, which we no longer do anymore. Mm-hmm. But I do want our listeners to know that anybody resonating with your story, like we still have a place for you. It would probably be in our program, the Fast Track. I mean, that's essentially everything that we ended up doing with you. And we just kind of did it in a different like fashion per se. But you know, you received one-on-one coaching and so that's what our Fast Track program is. And then as we were saying, we still work together because even though we might have a 12-week program to overcome your major obstacles, well, you know, there was, as we unfolded with Tara, a lot more in the backstory that we wanted to keep working on and things changing. And that's totally okay. I think in our 12 weeks of working together, you did overcome some major obstacles and really, you know, I think heal your body and then begin to make these mental transformations that were needed. And then now you're in our alumni program. And so in the alumni program, you know, just like the sleep thing you're mentioning is every month we present you with new information and a topic and kind of give you some challenges to hold yourself accountable. And then you have that community and you can still have one-on-one sessions throughout the year as needed and reach out and just get that help that you need. So that's why we've been able to work together for so long as you, you know, did that program, which would now be the Fast Track, and then joined alumni. So it's just been this nice journey of continuing to be your nutrition coaches throughout this.
Yeah. And when I was looking at figuring out getting help and stuff like that, I definitely wanted to get someone that was used to working with like athletes because I'm not necessarily competing about anything, at least not now. I'm not planning on doing like fastest known time trails yet. If I don't think I will, but I don't know. Who knows what the future holds?
Who knows?
But I definitely, I'm a big proponent. Like if you move or train like an athlete, you're an athlete. Like you definitely need to have someone who understands that side because it's very difficult to work with somebody. Like it's hard to work with somebody who doesn't understand that aspect of your life. Because it is a big aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially, you know, yeah, your lifestyle and where you live, you're just, you know, adventure and being outdoors and movement is just part, you know, it's just important to you and part of who you are. And so we go through different phases, as we did, where we had to step away, or we go through phases where we're training for an event, and then we go through phases where it's just for fun and enjoyment. But, you know, the whole time you're an athlete, mm-hmm. no matter which phase we're in.
Yeah, it was just a big off time.
Yeah.
It was just the off season.
I'm wondering if you could share, this might be too loaded of a question. Oh boy. Okay, I'm going to narrow it down.
Okay.
Now that you've been in the alumni program specifically, mm-hmm. what are some of your favorite aspects of that or benefits that you see out of it? Of like doing your original program, but then staying a part of Rise Up Nutrition?
Well, the big thing is like statistically, if you had, whether it be disordered eating or an eating disorder, like you typically relapse like within like 2 to 5, I think it's like 2 to 5 years or something like that. Or I don't know exactly the statistics.
I think that's about it.
Yeah. I wanted to go through this one time. I did not want to go through this a second time or a third time. So that really was like the driving force of, okay, I really want to make sure that I have this support system to help me through this. Because even to this day, like there's certain people that I love and cherish very much. And we have so many amazing things within that they bring to like the relationship we have. But a lot of times I cannot talk about food or things like that with certain people mm-hmm. just because like I had a girl the other day who is a good friend of mine who, like, and we've talked about this where she's a bodybuilder. And our training styles are very, very, very different. And I had to kind of talk to her and be like, hey, I need to put this boundary with you. And I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life or anything like that. But for my own health and for our health of the relationship, like, please, like, this needs to, I need you to be conscious of where I'm at with things. Mm-hmm. And so, like, having things like that is very good. So the alumni program really just allows me to have that support system and also keeps challenging me to, you know, get better because I think I am always going to be in recovery mode. You're always going to be a recovering whatever it is because, you know, it's something that was so ingrained in you. And I think I've gotten to a point where I've healed a big portion of that, but now it's at the point where maintaining that and making sure I understand that, you know, food is good. Food is life. Food means a hike, a successful one at that. And so that was really the big driving force is just making sure I did not, because I don't want to go through something like that. Like, I don't want to do this twice. Like, even with the, like another big through hike, I want, like, it's, my goal is for it not to be as drastic as it was this time around, that last time around.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I developed the alumni program too, is it's like, okay, I know I helped you through this major obstacles of your current life and you've transformed, but like life is always changing. So, you know, I don't want clients to ever feel like the door is shut. So the alumni program, it makes sure that the door is open, that you have your team mm-hmm. and a nutrition support team, but also that we're holding you somewhat accountable by meeting every month and having these nutrition talks and challenges and helping you get better. Because my goal for you, Tara, is you won't always feel like you're in recovery mode. There will be a day that you say, I am recovered.
Fair enough.
But it's because you're still doing these little challenges every month. Like you said that, oh, that did help me. Oh yeah, that sleep month that we focused on sleep and nutrition and sleep, like that you learned more and implemented more once again. And that helped you further along in this journey of yours, right? So, yeah, I just want to share that for whether it be current clients that are thinking, maybe I want to continue. You know, Tara is one of those people who has, and it's certainly helping her. Whether you want to become a client, know that I want you to accomplish as much as possible, as fast as possible, but we have continuation options. And if you're a past client listening to this and you didn't know about our alumni program, please reach back out. Doesn't matter if you were a client from 4 years ago, like you can reach back out and we can revisit this. So very cool, Tara. Well, oh my gosh, we're running out of time. And I want to ask you our usual questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
If there's one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Bread. I'm not kidding. Restricted is so long that I love bread. Bread is the greatest thing. Pizza is second to that. But yes, bread.
Yeah, because the crust is so good.
Oh my gosh, yes. The there's a New England pizza joint right around the corner and it's fire.
Love it. What's your favorite sport to participate in?
Ooh, okay. This one is going to come to a surprise, but I actually love whitewater kayaking. I can't do it where I'm located, but that is actually like, if I could do that every single, like I love hiking, I love rock climbing, but my favorite is whitewater kayaking just because of the adrenaline junkie in me. I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know. I love the river. I think it's because I used to be a swimmer. And if swimming had views, like I could go and like climb a mountain while swimming, I would do that. But you can't. So whitewater, like rafting and kayaking allow me to like still be in the water, but still see like beautiful views at the same time. So
totally makes sense. I get that. Yeah. Yeah. How about as a spectator, what's your favorite sport to watch?
Women's volleyball.
Yeah.
I used to work for CU and CSU's like a video production team. And I would literally be the camera person that took, we would watch all the different sports, but women's volleyball. Oh my gosh. You guys are badass.
It's one of my favorite spectator sports too. Yeah. I love it.
You're so powerful. It's awesome. I love it.
I don't know what it is about that sport. I'm thinking about it now. But yeah, they're powerful. They're impressive. You see everybody's individual strengths, but they work together as a team. It's a fast-paced game, but it can go on. You think it's going to be over in three. It goes on for five. It's like, it's really cool.
it's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. And then if there's a female athlete out there you want to give a shout out to, someone well-known or just in your personal life for being an inspiration, a role model, who would that be and why?
I would have to say Courtney Daltwater. She was someone that I listened to on trail a lot of the times just to kind of keep me going.
Yeah.
She gave me the idea of the pain box, which is her like philosophy of like when things are hard, she's just like chiseling the cave and making it better. And then on top of that, she eats whatever she wants. And she is one of the fastest women in ultra marathon. And I think that's so inspiring to me as someone who I don't necessarily trail run. Like I do it to like train, but I don't like take it super seriously right now. But
yeah,
that is something that like seeing that as like, I don't know, as like a woman who is like accomplishing so many things and really like eating to fuel her body to get her to point from point A to point B and in a very fast time, not only beating the women, but also the men. Like,
I know.
I am very inspired by that. So,
yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Courtney Dewalter for all that she's done in women's sports, fueling your body, trail community. Awesome. And thank you, Tara, for sharing so much of your story, being open. It's so helpful. Thank you so much.
I hope I just don't want another person to go through this because it was great. I love it. I'm glad that I went through it. I've learned so much from it. But if I can avoid another person going down the same rabbit hole that I went down, that's a win in my book. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure you did. And I can guarantee from the feedback I get from this podcast that your story will have helped. So thank you again so much.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie, please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action.
head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.